Chapter 7. Brainwashing and the Sleeping Partner. How or why do we start smoking in the first place? To understand this fully, you need to examine the powerful effect of the subconscious mind, or, as I call it, the sleeping partner. We all tend to think we're intelligent, dominant human beings, determining our path through life. In fact, 99% of our makeup is molded. We are a product of the society that we're brought up in. The sort of clothes we wear, the houses we live in, our basic life patterns, even those matters on which we tend to differ, for example, Labour or Conservative governments. It is no coincidence that Labour supporters tend to come from the working classes, and Conservatives from the middle and upper classes. The subconscious is an extremely powerful influence in our lives, and even in matters of fact, rather than opinion, millions of people can be deluded. Before Columbus sailed around the world, the majority of people knew it to be flat. Today, we know it is round. If I wrote a dozen books trying to persuade you that it was flat, I could not do it. Yet how many of us have been into space to see the ball? Even if you've flown or sailed around the world, how do you know that you were not travelling in a circle above a flat surface? Advertising men know well the power of suggestion over the subconscious mind. Hence the large posters the smoker is hit with as he drives around. The adverts in every magazine. You think they're a waste of money? That they don't persuade you to buy cigarettes? You are wrong. Try it out for yourself. Next time you go into a pub or restaurant on a cold day and your companion asks you what you're having to drink, instead of saying, a brandy or whatever, embellish it with, do you know what I would really enjoy today? That marvellous warm glow of a brandy. You'll find that even people who dislike brandy will join you. From our earliest years, our subconscious minds are bombarded daily with information telling us that cigarettes relax us and give us confidence and courage, and that the most precious thing on this earth is a cigarette. You think I exaggerate? Whenever you see a cartoon or film or play in which people are about to be executed or shot, what is their last request? That's right, a cigarette. The impact of this does not register on our conscious minds, but the sleeping partner has time to absorb it. What the message is really saying is, the most precious thing on this earth, my last thought and action, will be the smoking of a cigarette. In every war film, the injured man is given a cigarette. True, there is publicity the other way. The cancer scares, the legs being amputated, the bad breath campaigns. But these don't actually stop people smoking. Logically, they should, but the fact is they don't. They don't even prevent youngsters from starting. All the years that I remained a smoker, I honestly believed that had I known of the links between lung cancer and cigarette smoking, I would never have become a smoker. The truth is that it doesn't make the slightest bit of difference. The trap is the same today as when Sir Walter Raleigh fell into it. All the anti-smoking campaigns just help to add to the confusion. Even the products themselves, those lovely shining packets that lure you into trying their contents, contain a deadly warning on their sides. What smoker ever reads it, let alone brings himself to face the implications of it? I believe that a leading cigarette manufacturer is actually using the government health warning to sell its products. Many of the scenes include frightening features such as spiders, dragonflies, and the Venus flytrap. The health warning is now so large and bold that the smoker cannot avoid it, however hard he tries. The pang of fear that the smoker suffers prompts an association of ideas with the glossy gold packet. Ironically, the most powerful force in this brainwashing is the smoker himself. It is a fallacy that smokers are weak-willed and physically weak specimens. You have to be physically strong in order to cope with the poison. This is one of the reasons why smokers refuse to accept the overwhelming statistics that prove that smoking cripples your health. Everyone knows of an Uncle Fred who smoked 40 a day, never had a day's illness in his life, and lived to 80. They refuse even to consider the hundreds of other smokers who are cut down in their prime, or the fact that Uncle Fred might still be alive if he hadn't been a smoker. If you do a small survey among your friends and colleagues, you'll find that most smokers are, in fact, strong-willed people. They tend to be self-employed, business executives, or in certain specialized professions, such as doctors, lawyers, policemen, teachers, salesmen, nurses, secretaries, housewives with children, and so forth. In other words, anybody leading a stressful existence. The main delusion of smokers is that smoking relieves stress and tends to be associated with the dominant type, the type that takes on responsibility and stress, and of course, that is the type that we admire and therefore tend to copy. Another group that tends to get hooked are people in monotonous jobs, because the other main reason for smoking is boredom. However, the idea that smoking relieves boredom is also an illusion, I'm afraid. The extent of the brainwashing is quite incredible. As a society, we get all uptight about glue sniffing, heroin addiction, and so forth. Actual deaths from glue sniffing do not amount to 10 per annum, and deaths from heroin are less than 100 a year in this country. There is another drug, nicotine, on which over 60% of us become hooked at some time in our lives, and the majority spend the rest of their lives paying for it through the nose. Most of their spare money goes on cigarettes, and hundreds of thousands of people have their lives ruined every year because they became hooked. It is the number one killer in society, including road accidents, fires, and so forth. Why is it that we regard glue sniffing and heroin addiction as such great evils, while the drug that we spend most of our money on, and is actually killing us, we used to regard a few years ago as a perfectly acceptable social habit? In recent years, it's been considered a slightly unsociable habit that may injure our health, but is legal and on sale in glossy packets in every newsagent, pub, club, garage, and restaurant. The biggest vested interest is our own government. It makes £8 billion per year out of smokers, and the tobacco companies spend over £100 million per year in promotion alone. You need to start building resistance to this brainwashing, just as if you were buying a car from a second-hand dealer. You would be nodding politely, but you would not believe a word the man was saying. Start looking behind these glossy packets, at the filth and poison beneath. Do not be fooled by the cut glass ashtrays or the gold lighter or the millions who have been conned. Start asking yourself, why am I doing it? Do I really need to? No, of course you don't. I find this brainwashing aspect the most difficult of all to explain. Why is it that an otherwise rational, intelligent human being becomes a complete imbecile about his own addiction? It pains me to confess that out of the thousands of people that I have assisted in kicking the habit, I was the biggest idiot of all. Not only did I reach 100 a day myself, but my father was a heavy smoker. He was a strong man, cut down in his prime due to smoking. I can remember watching him when I was a boy. He would be coughing and spluttering in the mornings. I could see he wasn't enjoying it, and it was so obvious to me that something evil had got possession of him. I can remember saying to my mother, "Don't ever let me become a smoker." At the age of 15, I was a physical fitness fanatic. Sport was my life, and I was full of courage and confidence. If anybody had said to me in those days that I would end up smoking 100 cigarettes a day, I would have gambled my lifetime's earnings that it would not happen, and I would have given any odds that had been asked. At the age of 40, I was a physical and mental cigarette junkie. I had reached the stage where I couldn't carry out the most mundane physical or mental act without first lighting up. With most smokers, the triggers are the normal stresses of life, like answering the telephone or socializing. I couldn't even change a television program or a light bulb without lighting up. I knew it was killing me. There was no way I could kid myself otherwise. But why I couldn't see what it was doing to me mentally, I cannot understand. It was almost jumping up and biting me on the nose. The ridiculous thing is that most smokers suffer the delusion at some time in their life that they enjoy a cigarette. I never suffered that delusion. I smoked because I thought it helped me to concentrate, and because it helped my nerves. Now I am a non-smoker. The most difficult part is trying to believe that those days actually happened. It's like awakening from a nightmare, and that's about the size of it. Nicotine is a drug, and your senses are drugged. Your taste buds, your sense of smell. The worst aspect of smoking isn't the injury to your health or pocket. It's the warping of the mind. you search for any plausible excuse to go on smoking. I remember at one stage switching to a pipe after a failed attempt to kick cigarettes, in the belief that it was less harmful and would cut down my intake. Some of those pipe tobaccos are absolutely foul. The aroma can be pleasant, but to start with, they are awful to smoke. I can remember that for about 3 months, the tip of my tongue was as sore as a boil. A liquid brown goo collects in the bottom of the bowl of the pipe. Occasionally, you unwittingly bring the bowl above the horizontal, and before you realize it, you have swallowed a mouthful of the filthy stuff. The result is usually to throw up immediately, no matter what company you are in. It took me 3 months to learn to cope with the pipe. But what I cannot understand is why I didn't sit down sometime during that 3 months and ask myself why I was subjecting myself to the torture. Of course, once they learn to cope with the pipe, no one appears more contented than pipe smokers. Most of them are convinced that they smoke because they enjoy the pipe. But why did they have to work so hard to learn to like it when they were perfectly happy without it? The answer is that once you have become addicted to nicotine, the brainwashing is increased. Your subconscious mind knows that the little monster has to be fed, and you block everything else from your mind. As I have already stated, it is fear that keeps people smoking. The fear of that empty, insecure feeling that you get when you stop supplying the nicotine. Because you are not aware of it, doesn't mean it isn't there. You don't have to understand it any more than a cat needs to understand where the underfloor hot water pipes are. It just knows that if it sits in a certain place, it gets the feeling of warmth. It is the brainwashing that is the main difficulty in giving up smoking. The brainwashing of our upbringing in society reinforced with the brainwashing from our own addiction and, most powerful of all, the brainwashing of our friends, relatives and colleagues. Did you notice that up to now I've frequently referred to giving up smoking? This is a classic example of the brainwashing. The expression implies a genuine sacrifice. The beautiful truth is that there is absolutely nothing to give up. On the contrary, you'll be freeing yourself from a terrible disease and achieving marvelous positive gains. We're going to start removing this brainwashing now. From this point on, no longer will we refer to giving up, but to stopping, quitting, or the true position, escaping. The only thing that persuades us to smoke in the first place is all the other people doing it. We feel we are missing out. We work so hard to become hooked, yet nobody ever finds out what they have been missing. But every time we see another smoker, he reassures us that there must be something in it. Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing it. Even when he has kicked the habit, the ex-smoker feels he is being deprived when a smoker lights up at a party or other social function. He feels safe. He can have just one. And before he knows it, he is hooked again. This brainwashing is very powerful, and you need to be aware of its effects. Many older smokers will remember the Paul Temple Detective series that was a very popular radio program after the war. One of the series was dealing with addiction to marijuana, commonly known as pot or grass. Unbeknown to the smoker, wicked men were selling cigarettes that contained pot. There were no harmful effects. People merely became addicted and had to go on buying the cigarettes. During my consultations, literally hundreds of smokers have admitted to trying pot. None of them said they became hooked on it. I was about 7 years old when I listened to the program. It was my first knowledge of drug addiction. The concept of addiction, being compelled to go on taking the drug, filled me with horror. And even to this day, in spite of the fact that I'm fairly convinced that pot is not addictive, I would not dare take one puff of marijuana. How ironic that I should have ended up a junkie on the world's number one addictive drug. If only Paul Temple had warned me about the cigarette itself. How ironic, too, that over 50 years later, mankind spends thousands of pounds on cancer research, yet millions are spent persuading healthy teenagers to become hooked on the filthy weed, our own government having the largest vested interest. We are about to remove the brainwashing. it is not the non-smoker who is being deprived, but the poor smoker who is forfeiting a lifetime of health, energy, wealth, peace of mind, confidence, courage, self-respect, happiness, freedom. And what does he gain from these considerable sacrifices? Absolutely nothing, except the illusion of trying to get back to the state of peace, tranquility, and confidence that the non-smoker enjoys all the time.